WSJU Radio, this is DJ Mad Max on air here for a very special October show, and we have a legend calling in here from the phone lines who's been in lots and dozens of movies over the years. He's been in Platoon, Night of Living Dead from 1990, Candyman films, The Crow, Final Destination, The Hatchet films, and even Transformers. And the legend's name is Tony Todd. How are you doing today, Tony?
Hey, what's up, Mad Max? How are you, man?
I'm good, man. It's an honor to have you call in. I grew up just watching all the Candyman films, big horror movie buff. And
awesome.
It's just great to even be speaking with you on the phone lines. I never thought that this would happen, but I reached out, and it's a blessing.
You see what happens when you sometimes just ask somebody at the right time, right place, miracles can occur, folks.
Yep, for sure. And it's a blessing to have you.
Man, you're a Connecticut native, which is great. Or at least a Connecticut resident.
Yeah. I was born in Norwalk and living here ever since. And I know you were born in Washington, D.C., and you grew up in Hartford.
I grew up, I came to Hartford, Connecticut when I was 3 years old. I was rescued by my aunt from sort of a troubled early childhood, and she put me on the path to graciousness and glory.
Wow. What else would...
Everything I do is in her honor. Aunt Clara, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful woman. Every person needs to have somebody, some adult in their life that encourages every decision that they try to do and takes them off the path when they get derailed. So here's to our elders.
Yes. And I could say for the same for my mom, who's put me in the right path and just keep working hard, and she's inspired me and just helped me out throughout my life. And like you said, it's important to just honor those people who help you out in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Friends and family, and sometimes even the minor acquaintances that you stumble across. Everybody is a bridge to another path.
Of course.
But enough platitudes. Let's get down to business.
Now, what made you decide to attend the University of Connecticut?
Well, you know, they had me on an academic path, you know. Mm-hmm. I think they were grooming me to either be a lawyer or maybe even a politician. I was actually approached middle school by a government agency, and they wanted me to investigate being a linguist.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I found art when I was in high school, and theater specifically. And once I did that, once I was able to see or achieve the recognition of my peers, most of which were on the football or basketball team, and I wasn't a man. I had a growth spurt, you know, and I was just totally uncoordinated. But when it came to theater and the arts, it was like there were no roadblocks. And when it came time to graduate high school, UConn, because I kind of messed up in my senior year because I was just only interested in theater. No more algebra, no more geometry, no more trigonometry. I just wanted to do what, you know, moved me, that made me, it gave me pleasure, and also gave me a window as a young African-American. You know, this is, I didn't want to do the negative roots, and art truly saved.
Mm.
So UConn was it, but I only stayed there for a year. Well, technically, academically for a year, and I hung around the campus up in Storrs, Connecticut for about 2 years past that. And then I finally got a scholarship to Gene O'Neill Theater Center in Waterford, Connecticut. And any aspiring people out there, it is a great place to start. They throw you into fencing lessons at 5 in the morning, every morning. And they give you great breakfast, and for the next 10 hours, you're working with seasoned professionals. And then from there, I got a scholarship to Trinity Rep in Providence, where I spent 7 years getting my master's. And, you know, that was it.
And then,
well, not quite it, but that was it academically.
And then you moved on to act on Broadway. What was that experience like for you? And what were some of your favorite roles?
Well, there was a little bit. Yeah, well, well, I did Aida on Broadway, the Elton John musical, and I was also working with August Wilson, one of the greatest African-American dramatists of our generation. He's gone now, but I originated King Edward II, which had Max Roach as our musical director. And to look over and see Max, the infamous Max Roach, who played with Miles Davis, sitting in our rehearsals, just like rhythmically moving and acknowledgement and pleasure. It was just amazing. So regional theater is where it's at. I love film. I love TV. But theater really rocks my soul.
And was
maybe
there...
because in another life, I would have been a musician. But I caught a lot of great musicians as friends of mine and acquaintances. So it all evens out.
And you just told me that you would have been a musician in another career. What genre of music would you have dived into?
Jazz, blues. I have a guitar that I mess around with that I pick up from time to time. But yeah, just music, man. Music is the eternal language. No matter what country you're from, if it's good stuff, people gravitate to it, and you feed their soul. I just saw one of the hippest documentaries I've seen in quite some time, which is Miles Davis' Birth of the Cool. If you're a jazz fan, if you love the legacy of Miles Davis, if you want to spend 2 hours trying to figure out what made him tick and the perfectionist that he was, and the flaws, every great person has a flaw too. But through, the legacy is what counts.
Miles Davis is definitely a legend.
Birth of the Cool. Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I got to see him once. There used to be a club up in UConn, up in Collin, called Shabu Inn. And it was around for 10 years until it mysteriously burned down one night, as it goes in Connecticut. But they brought in everybody. Bobby Blue Bland, Miles Davis, Bobby Womack, Santana. And it was only $5 to get in, which is about all I could afford on a college stipend. So those were some of my forming grounds.
Favorite Miles Davis record, if you had to choose, what would it be?
The toss up between So What or Kind of Blue.
Yeah, Kind of Blue
or
is epic.
Bitches Brew.
Yep.
Bitches Brew.
Yeah, those are all iconic, and I've recently started getting into jazz because I took a jazz music class for my DNY class, and I went to this cafe in New York called the Blue Note Jazz Club.
And, oh, yeah, it's a good place.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good place. They get into top acts, but some of the better jazz is at a place called Smalls, which is on 7th and 10th. 7th and Avenue and 10th Street. It's a little basement joint. Have you been there?
No, I'm going to definitely have to check it out, though.
What makes that unique, first of all, it's free after midnight, and you got all the students from all the great schools in New York, Juilliard, NYU, et cetera, St. John's, and they come there and they blow the classics, man, and there's nothing like it.
That's definitely going to have to check that out very soon.
Check it out. Yeah, there's other places, Village Vanguard, that's the history of New York. And that, they explore that in Birth of the Cool. At one point in the late 50s, early 60s on 52nd Street, there was literally 33 blues jazz joints lining the blocks between 6. It was amazing. Can you imagine that? Being able to just hop from one place to the other with the hips of the hip, okay? Sharing the tonalities. Awesome.
That's epic. And
yeah,
I want to ask you about
Epic Records.
Yeah, sure. And after Broadway, how did you transition into film?
Actually, I had only been doing regional theater and off-Broadway stuff in New York before I got my first film, which was Platoon. And it was because I was doing a one-man show called Johnny Got His Gun, written by the late, great, somewhat communist Dalton Trumbull. And Oliver Stone's people caught wind of it. And next thing you know, I'm in the Philippines making my first film, which ended up winning 4 Academy Awards. So it was a great start. And once that hit and came out and received the accolades it did, we were all placed on a very short list. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how everything just fell into place.
What was your experience?
Broadway actor.
From working with Oliver Stone?
How can I put it? It was my first film, so I had nothing else to judge by, but mm-hmm. he was such a perfectionist and a great castmaster in the best way possible. He only wanted to get the best from everybody that he cast. I remember the first day we shot, after we had spent 3.5 weeks doing a boot camp, fake boot camp, but it was real to us. They airdropped Budweiser beer for us at like, I don't know, 1 a.m. or something like that. And then Oliver switched the tables on us and said, okay, we're going to take our first shot, 6 a.m. Everybody had been smashed, drunk. It is a shot in platoon where we're just on a steady march through the bush, through the jungle. And that was that moment. So, and I remember he yelled at me, the very first shot that was ever done. I was so enthusiastic, so gung-ho, that I guess I was jumping from rock to rock. And he said, slow down, little Fan Flynn. Let's keep it real. This is Vietnam, not Robin Hood. So that was, it was a good gerrymandering.
Oh, man.
And quite a lesson. On, you know, film is very subtle. The camera sees everything, so you don't have to push anything. And it takes a while for a young actor to realize that, particularly in film. Just if you feel it and you see it and you believe it, the camera gets it. So. Mm.
And I've seen you in
great masterclass.
In many interviews, you said that you didn't want to get into the horror genre. How come?
No, it wasn't that I didn't want to get into the horror genre. It's just I grew up watching all kinds of films, man. Oh. I'm a huge film noir buff, you know, Billy Wilder, Alfred Hitchcock, Wild Wash, those are my heroes. And I just sort of saw myself, doing, not that horror isn't classic, there certainly are some classic films, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of caca in some films,
yeah.
You know, and I just wanted to keep it true. The horror just happened. It was a luck of the draw, and it just happened. And I think my first experience was Night of the Living Dead, Tom Savini's remake, which is a great entry in the horror genre. So I was happy for that. But some of the scripts I get sent, man, I can't get past 10-15 pages. if it all starts in the woods and it all involves teenagers running for their lives, I'm just not interested.
Yeah, that's tends to be a repetitive script in a lot of the slashers from the 80s movies. And which brings me to my next question. What was it like to play Ben in the 1990 remake of George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead, formerly played by Dwayne Jones?
Originally played by the great Dwayne Jones,
yeah.
Who actually, I think didn't he have a teaching assignment? It was either at St. John's, no, it was at the City College.
Yeah, that's right.
Teaching
yep.
up at City College. And so I was aware of him through circles, and I was actually in Pittsburgh working on a film with Forrest Whitaker and Rosie Perez called Criminal Justice. And we had been filming, and Forrest was one of Kenny. He said, hey, man, you know, they're filming a remake of Night of the Living Dead, and you look like you're part of Dwayne Jones' tribe. How come you're not doing this? And the next day off I had, which was a Saturday, I tracked down the production office and went over there, and I saw Tom sneaking around the corner doing one of his magical special effects moments. Listen, and he says, no, I think I got it. I think it's all set. And he'll verify this. I grabbed him by the lapels, sat him down, and just went on a riff. You know, just did a stone cold monologue. Next thing you know, Monday I had the job. So, awesome. At that time, I actually had a choice between that or another film that was a huge hit that dealt with the drug world, and you know, with a newborn son. And for his first film to look back on, I preferred being a hero, whether it was in a horror film or not. And I had a great cast, Bill Moseley, myself, Patricia Tallman, William Butler, It was fantastic. Katie Finneran, who also who's gone on to have an astounding Broadway career. And Tom Savini at the helm. And late, great Tom Tolles, whose Harry was so good that I couldn't be Ben without his being as despicable a Harry as he could be.
Mm. And what was it like to work with George A. Romero and Tom Savini as well?
Well, George was a constant present. He was there. You know, this was his baby. You know, unfortunately, when he did the original Night of the Living Dead, they were young filmmakers and they didn't understand anything about distribution and stuff, and they gave away their rights, which is one reason why Night of the Living Dead has been, they've attempted to duplicate it so many times because they don't have to pay rights. Mm. So the color version was his and John Russo and Russ Steiner's thing that they attended. So he had a very hands-on presence, and Tom was his special effects guy anyway, so they knew each other, and they just trusted the cast and the zombies that came miles around to be in the movie, and we got it done. It was a great cast and a great crew. I think that was maybe my fourth film or so. I had done some TV before that, but it was only my fourth film.
And the rest is history.
Well, certainly within the horror world. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, no matter how bad some horror films could be, horror fans are some of the best, most dedicated, ravenous, bloodthirsty fan base on the planet.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For that, I respect them. It's allowed me to con work. One of the best things for me when I do cons is seeing all the wonderful fan art. People come up to me at my table. You look at my IG page, Tony Todd Official, you'll see some of that stuff. I'm currently working on my autobiography. It's not going to be ghostwritten.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's going to be done by me, and I'm working, collaborating with a wonderful filmmaker, Gregory Von Hess, who's a teacher up in the Bronx. I've done some master classes for him. It's going to be great. We're going to do a virtual reality kind of presentation. But the centerpiece is going to be pictures and memories of all the fan art that I've been presented with. And there's over 1,000 to choose from. So I'm going to pick the best of the best. And give people that buy the book or read the book an experience. And as an African-American, just navigating through the cinematic universe and a business that, you know, we're told only 1 in 1,000 can make it. And I've been blessed and fortunate.
And when can we expect the autobiography?
It's going to be interactive. It's going to have clips and memories. I'm breaking it up into cities that I've either worked in or visited to. I think I've been to every state in this country except for Wyoming.
Wow.
And that's deep down. So, like, every, you know, I just want to show the path and the journey of an African-American artist in contemporary America, through the political minefields, through social changes, through what it's done for me, and hopefully serve as an inspiration to people that come after me.
And getting into Candyman, I believe you were abroad at the time when you were called to play Candyman. Is that right?
Well, I had just gotten back from my first trip/film in Africa. I was in Nairobi doing a film called The Last Elephant, which had Isabella Rossellini, John Lithgow, and the great James Earl Jones, who served as an early mentor to me. And I had been back home 2 weeks, and I get a call from my manager at the time, not the legendary Jeff Goldberg, who has been my manager now for 25 years. But they called and said, there's this film the director wants to see you. It's called Candyman. And I hung up. I thought they were joking. I thought it was perhaps a Sammy Davis Jr. reflection. But then they called back and said, no, we're serious. I met Bernard Rose, a mad Englishman who had the genius to transpose Clive Barker's Book of the Forbidden, the Forbidden Story, and transposing it into Chicago, you know, inner city turmoil. And I'll tell you, you know, Candyman is definitely probably what I'm most known for in the horror community.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, people would come up to me and they would say, oh, you know, you scared the Jesus out of me. And I would ask them, well, how old were you when you saw it? And the average age was about 7. And I said, oh, man, we didn't make a movie for kids. Bernard calmed me down. He said, anybody who's seen this film when they were a child is going to remember it for the rest of their lives. And he was right.
Yeah, for sure. I remember it.
And then here we are now on the precipice of the Jordan Peele produced and written new film that drops on June 12th, 2020, which happens to be my Aunt Clara's birthday. So I know there's a spiritual connection.
Wow. And you're going to be in the film too, right?
You know what? The official line is no comment.
Okay.
None. Zip. Nada. No comment for all the bean counters and business affairs people everywhere. I know nothing. I know nothing. I know nothing.
Oh, man. I want to get.
You can't get it out of me. I know nothing, nothing, nothing.
I want to get into your scenes with the bees. And how did you mentally prepare for the scenes with the bees? And if so, how?
Okay. A, we had a wonderful bee wrangler named Norman Gary. I didn't even know there was such a job. But this man loved bees. He had appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson playing the saxophone covered with bees. Hmm. When I first read the script, I knew that those scenes of bees coming from his mouth and his chest cavities was something that hadn't been seen before. And this is a chance to tap into something that, you know, a once in a cinematic lifetime moment. So I just had to, you know, I was a weird kid. I was an only kid. So I actually had studied hypnotism when I was like 13. I was an amateur magician. I used to put anybody that would willingly volunteer into a trance. So I knew things about, you know, creative visualization and astral projection and how to take myself out of the physical moment and suspend time. I know that sounds strange, but that's what I did. And just enjoyed it. Fortunately, we only got 26 things in the course of the first 3 films. And, you know. And it paid off. Yeah. And I got compensated for everything. So
I think it was, I read that it was $1,000 per sting, right?
Yeah, which I don't know what that translates to in today's economy, but it was it felt clear at the time.
Mm. Now, what do you love most about the Candyman role and playing it?
That he's an African-American horror icon. Mm-hmm. That is withstood the test of time. Not the first. You know, we had Blackula. We even had a with the late great Samuels. But it was just different, and I thought it was genius that it took place in the Cabrini Green, which is now torn down and gentrified. And you know, I just wanted to make a film that, to be honest, that young African Americans could champion and say, oh, there we are. We're not, you know, sometimes African-Americans and Latin actors have been a horror film, you know, they're going to die within, you know, mm-hmm. 10 minutes. This one was, we're going to be in it from frame one to frame to the closing frame. Mm-hmm. So I just felt it was part of an historical moment. We did have some problems before it was even shot by the NAACP that were concerned about a black boogeyman, but that's not what we're doing.
Really?
And they finally came around. Yeah, you know, hey, bean counters, what can I say? Which is maybe why I've never won an NAACP Image Award.
Wow, I never even knew that.
Some people never forget. Yeah, it was kind of weird, but they passed off. I didn't know we had to ask permission, but I guess Bernard gave them an audience, and we went on, and we did our thing. You know, but so many things were right about that production. We had Tony Richmond was the DP who had shot The Man Who Fell to Earth. Virginia Madsen, the luminous beauty that she is, and She made everything easy for me. Bernard Leonard, who did the iconic costume. You had Philip Glass's music, which is a haunting way to start it. And you had the city of Chicago, which is one of my favorite cities, as a backdrop. And then we shot all the studio stuff at the famous Charlie Chaplin Theater here in Hollywood on Occidental Boulevard.
Wow.
So I remember all of it like it was yesterday, and all of these things and all of these stories and all of my recollections, hopefully told in a new and refreshing way, will be part of the biography, autobiography.
I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, but the bees were, you know, I remember 3 days before we shot, Norman, the bees actually had their own trailer.
Wow, really?
Norman, how many bees? And he says, he may have been joking. He said, close to a billion. And I turned and I walked away. He says, no, Tony, they're your acting partner. So I want you to get used to them. And he and I walked into the trailer. I've never seen anything like it. We were swarmed. But they were baby bees, and they hadn't developed stingers yet. So he calmed me down with that. And just, and then he was such a... I don't want to say the word weird because that sounds negative. He loved what he did so much that he went around and started saying, and that's Harry over there. There's George. There's Sidney. I mean, we're in a trailer with fucking 1,000 bees swirling around us, and he claimed he knew their names.
Wow.
But it was a way of off-putting the, you know, the obvious trepidation.
And I heard, and I saw in an interview, too, that they put something in your throat when they were in your mouth too, right?
Yeah, they had to put a dental dam in to prevent them. You know, I'm a foodie, but I've never had a roasted bee in my life, so we didn't get anything inside. But they were certainly, and they also painted me with Phenerome, which is the queen bee essence stuff that keeps the drones excited and happy. So they were like little crackheads swirling around my body.
And Candyman is also referenced in hip hop. Now that you're on the show for sports and hip hop, Tupac in Troublesome 96 says, say my name three times like Candyman.
Right.
And Wu-Tang's Method Man in Vision says, all in together now, follow me, the Mr. Meth Candyman, farewell to the flesh.
Awesome.
And what's it like to have your character mentioned in notable hip hop songs?
Dude, that's like a badge of honor. Now, tell me the Wu-Tang one again.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you said was Method Man.
Yeah.
What was the song?
It was called Visions.
Visions. Okay, I'm going to drop that. You know, I do a lot of Spotify dropping on my Twitter timeline, so I got to put that down.
Oh, yeah.
Tupac I was aware of. And then I think there's a hip-hop artist also named Candyman.
So yeah, that's
those
right.
Those are the biggest, forms of acceptance and you know, just platitude possible, you know, to cross into that, to get that. And you know, not a day, even though the original film is 25 years old, not a day goes by where I'm not somewhere, grocery store, at a baseball game, where people, you know, acknowledge it. So that's the greatest testament of all. But our visions, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, for
sure. And is it under Wu-Tang Clan or is it a Method Man?
It's under Wu-Tang Clan. It's on the Wu-Tang Forever album. Yep.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great song.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out immediately.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to...
Thank you, Wu-Tang Clan. And they got their new documentary out as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I have to check that out.
How was it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I just saw that. I heard
it. Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, I want to watch it, though. One of my favorite groups of all time.
Absolutely.
And I also want to get into your role.
Tupac is one of my favorites.
Oh, Tupac? Yeah, he's a legend. I think he's the greatest of all time as a rapper, especially what he did.
I would concur. Especially when he did what? What were you going to say?
Oh, especially what he did for the hip-hop culture. He's just iconic.
Dude, you know, except for those a few missteps at the end of his life. But other than that, him and Biggie, man, I mean, the reasons for their feuds were deep and mysterious, but they were like the fact that they existed at the same time and that they're both gone in similar ways is just mind-blowing. And neither of the cases has ever been solved. Okay? All right.
No, it's sad too. I just want to know before my life is over what really happened there, but I don't know if I'll ever know. It's always.
I don't think we'll know, man. Yeah, can we say cover up? But it's all good.
Yeah.
Some more hip hop experiences.
Oh, man. But like I was going to bring up before, I also wanted to get in your role in Final Destination. Your delivery in that scene in the morgue is. The coroner was some of the best delivery that I've ever seen in a movie. And it was just bone chilling.
Wow.
And you remind me a lot of Vincent Price. Just the voice.
That's
almost.
Interesting.
Yeah, the voice comparison.
I wish Michael had asked me to be in Thriller.
I was thinking that if there was
that
to be.
That would have put the icing on the cake.
Oh.
Hello?
I said that. I said if someone were to remake Thriller in today's age, they got to call you up for it.
Yeah, well, we get calls. We get very interesting calls. So we haven't disappeared, which is wonderful. And right now, I got films in the can. That's all set. The phone is always ringing, and I'm about to sign a deal soon. Probably this is going to air in October, so by the time this airs, it should probably have been announced. But it's a major TV gig.
Ooh.
But not traditional TV. Just, it's going to be, I can't really say much more, but look for it.
Mm-hmm. I saw something on an interview. It was, I think you were talking about a reality show or something like that.
It's reality based, yes, but it's not, no Screaming Housewives. And no paranormal machines. We're going to be investigating real shit. Matter of fact, have you ever heard of there's an area, a city in Connecticut, I think it's called Darby Town?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I've heard. It's like an abandoned town, and you're not allowed in there.
You're not allowed, and you're not allowed to take anything from there anywhere. So that's one of the places we're visiting, as well as the suicide forest in Japan. But I'm saying too much. But trust me, it's going to be, Anthony Bourdain was a personal hero of mine. It's going to be that quality with some original music. And just every episode is going to be a completely new place. And it's going to work out with my schedule because it's going to be 2 weeks shooting and traveling and then 2 weeks off.
Mm.
So, and then if I have a film that comes up, they're going to work with me, and it's the thing I'm going to be producing. And hopefully, if it's successful, it's going to lead to other the kind of reality shows I want to see. Mm. Right?
I'm going to be looking forward to that.
Yeah, one of them is a tentative show called Upstate, which is just going to focus on the culture of cover bands, small groups in upstate New York that play every weekend and just following them around, why people enjoy live music, what are musicians' real lives like. I got to hang out with a lot of blues musicians in Chicago, and even though, Buddy Guy owns his own club now, is very successful, but at the end of the night, they got to have chicken wings somewhere, and they got to decompress. So I just want to tap into that energy. All of America loves to sing and dance, right?
Yeah.
And be moved. So I gave away a lot of clues there.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to
it.
I'll be on the lookout, especially on
Darby Town, man.
Oh, yeah. I've been looking into that for years, and just it's just very eerie, especially the stories I hear for people tell when they came back there. It's just it's just not a great place to visit.
Yeah, well, part of my team is going to have a spiritual advisor, so we're going to make sure that we're cleansed before we go and before we leave, and we'll have a great security team. It's just going to be awesome.
Great.
Think of me as a horror psychologist.
And as we all know,
this has been in development for a year now, so we're really close to when probably start shooting in October.
Great. And when this will probably air the following year then, right?
No, it'll probably, I think it'll probably drop by the end of the year.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And now
moving. And then the voiceover world, which is, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. Go ahead. You the floor is yours, trust me.
Yeah, the voiceover world has really been exploding lately. You know, that's one of the hardest areas to crack and to get into in the whole entertainment world. Mm-hmm. Probably because everybody's realized how lucrative it is, and you know, the A-listers all want to do it. You'll never see me in a cartoon, let's say. Although when my kids are little, all they watch was Disney films, and I tried my best to get one of those.
I saw that in an interview. You always wanted to be in a Disney film.
Yeah, why? Because of my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they were young. The films I was doing, I wouldn't let them watch. In spite of all those 7-year-olds that snuck in to see Candyman, you know, my kids did other things. But so then finally, I got Transformers, and I told this in interviews. But I called my daughter. I was so excited, and she says, "Dad, when are you going to grow up?" And I said to her, "Never." I'm that little black kid growing up near the projects that I was when I was 7.
And I also wanted to get into your Hatchet films, and you played the role of Reverend Zombie. Sure. What was it like working with mm-hmm. Kane Hodder?
Kane is a good friend of mine. We've known each other for years. I think we've done maybe 6 things together.
Wow.
But it was Adam Green who brought us all together, and apparently Victor Crowley was a story he started working on when he was either 8 or 10, and I remember he was a fan first, and I remember meeting him at a Fangoria convention in Hollywood once, and we sat and talked about 45 minutes, told me all the stuff he loved, and he assured me that he was going to be a filmmaker. I'm an optimist, and I tried to encourage people, and I said, well, I guess I'll see you on set, and took years later, I get a call, and I was in the first one, and ended up being in 1 and 2. And it was his energy, his love of the genre, his joy of life that like made that set impetuous and fun, and created a new mythological creature for horror fans. Mm-hmm.
I met Kane Hodder a few times, too. He was at Count Orlok's Nightmare Gallery in Salem, Massachusetts. He's a good guy, though.
Yeah, is he there? What? That's where you met him? Or is that where
met him at Count Orlok's in Salem, Massachusetts.
I've never been to that. Yeah, never been to that one. Mm.
And
you know what else is haunted a little bit is Lake Compounds in Bristol.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't even know about that. Yeah. I never been to the Lake Compounds.
When I was a kid, I've been there once as a kid. I remember not liking it. I didn't know why. But do you remember? You may be too young. There used to be a park up in Agawam, Massachusetts, called Riverside Park. Six Flags.
Never.
Yeah, they had an old wooden roller coaster called the Thunderbolt. Man, I used the sound. It was like, you know, forget all these super roller coasters you got now that just zip around and twirl you around. This one was the sound of those chains climbing up to the top, and then whoosh, and you could swear that the place was going to like break. The roller coaster was going to break. It sounded creaky and stuff. And I heard, unfortunately, that they finally tore it down like 2 years ago. Been around for like 50 years.
Wow.
But, you know, things change. Do you fish? By any chance?
No, I never was into fishing for some reason. Do you fish or?
I was a kid, my whole time in Connecticut, there's over 100 lakes in Connecticut. I think I must have fished in 99 of them. And there's nothing like going to a bait shop, man, with your friends, making some sandwiches, having a 6-pack of beer, getting on a rowboat or motorboat if you could get that, and just spending the day in the sunshine, man. Mm. Nothing like it.
Yeah, I never got into fishing for some reason. My stepfather is a huge fisher. Huge.
I think you might like it.
Yeah.
It's very rhythmic, you know, and you never know how the experience is going to end or how the song is going to end. Mm-hmm. You're in the moment.
It's definitely relaxing, too.
I recommend it. It's nice. I was just going to say that. It's calming. It's peaceful. You know, those are the things I miss about New England. And the Four Seasons and the leaves changing. I used to hang out in Vermont and New Hampshire a lot. Mm. You know, all that. And live music. And Toad's Place in New Haven.
Oh, Toad's Place. Oh, that's like our SOBs.
I saw, what, they changed their name?
No, I said that's like Connecticut's SOBs, because SOB is a huge
place. Oh, SOB in New York. Yeah, that's a great place, too. Yeah. I saw a lot of people in there. Rolling Stones. It was awesome.
Yeah, I've heard stories. I heard Mobb Deep's been there. I know Nas has performed there. Yep. It's a small venue, too, and everywhere you're sitting there.
But the door's been open forever.
Yeah.
At least three generations. So that's good. And you got Pepe's Pizza in New Haven.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
It's huge. It's a huge pizza place.
And, you know, people may not know this, but Connecticut's a huge theater community. You got Yale Rep, you got Long Wharf, you got Harper Stage, you got Theater Works. You know, so if anybody is in Connecticut and saying, what do I do? How do I do it? And then there are smaller theaters like Hole in the Wall in New Britain, Manchester Community College has a theater program. There's things you can do. You know, people can't procrastinate about acting. You got to get up, get started, and do it. Volunteer, do whatever you need. Show your love for it, and it will return its love. And then even deeper than that, for all the people that, like, everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody's life is unique and particular to them. So, you know, just open up your laptop and start writing and have a beginning, middle, and an end, and say something, you know? You never know.
And we're talking about a lot of geography here. What are some of your favorite places to travel, or some of your favorite places where you filmed?
I love Africa. I've been there four times. I just shot a film in Cape Town in February. It's Bulletproof 2. Faison Love, myself, and a great cast. That's the high point. I shot a film in Paris, France, called Le Secret. I was there for 6 months. It blew my mind. Just the history. Talk about a country that loves to drink. The first night, you know, I'm trying to be a professional. First night, the producers, they wanted to take me all around all these places. After the eighth place, I said, what time are we shooting tomorrow? And every single pub I went to had a little plaque, had a little chair that said Ernest Hemingway sat here. I said, okay. Then we start shooting. Lunches in Europe are different than in America. In America, we have maybe a half hour to an hour to eat.
Yeah.
It's quiet. People go to their trailers. In Paris, it's a 3 hour lunch. And after you eat, they bring out the wine bottles. For the first day, I'm going, oh, no, I'm an American. I studied America. We don't drink while we work. By the end of the week, I'm sharing wine with them. It was one of the most joyous sets I've ever been on, until the end, and everybody started screaming at each other. That was a highlight, being on Broadway, major highlight. To finish a show in New York City and not have to be back until 7 o'clock the next night, and to have New York as your open playground, nothing like it. Those are the big ones, you know.
Mm.
Then there's other highlights that were film specific, but Paris, Africa, you know, Broadway.
I have to put those on my bucket list to go to Paris and Africa. Sounds great.
Oh man, yeah, Paris is a little closer. I mean, you got three museums where you can actually get within 3 feet of the Mona Lisa. You know, you just, whether you're an artist or not, but let's just say that you are an artist, it's just going to fuel your art. You know, that's why if you look at the history of jazz and the expatriation of jazz musicians in this country, they all went to Paris, and the racism was gone. It was negated. Didn't exist. People judged you on what you did, what your job was, and they would come back to America and, you know, face the same old racial crap and couldn't understand it. That's why Nina Simone stayed there. That's why Miles spent time there. Coleman Hawkins, you know, Dexter Gordon. There's something about it.
Mm.
That's unique. Now, don't get me wrong. I love America. This is what I grew up with, but we have our problems.
Yes.
I can't wait for our real divide to finally decide.
And this is why.
And if you're not, get political. I don't care what side you're on, just get political and get involved.
Yeah, and I'd agree with you 100%. And this is why, this brings us back to George A. Romero, why he was a genius with the Night of the Living Dead. Because that, what people don't realize, that was a racial tension movie.
Oh, yeah. With people that were put in a life or death situation.
Mm.
And I asked George, I said, George, why? What inspired you to cast Dwayne originally? And he told me that the role wasn't written African-American. It was written, you know, open. And Dwayne just happened to be the best actor to come in the room. And I remember when I first saw the original black and white, it was at a drive-in theater in East Hartford. And I said, wow. And I knew I kind of wanted to be an actor then, but like seeing him up on the big screen, said, okay, I can do this. There's going to be job opportunities for me. And thankfully, there were.
And years later, you reprised the role.
Yeah, which is, you know, and I only wanted to give honor to Dwayne and what he did.
Mm.
And other people like Ken Faree, you know, who
did
great.
Dawn of the Dead?
Dawn of the Dead. You know, he's a good friend of mine. You know, Terry Alexander, who did Day of the Dead.
Mm.
It's great. Eugene, who did the... what was that movie? Or the zombie with John Leguizamo?
Oh,
Dennis Hopper. Not Island of the Dead. Come on, it was one of George's last films.
Was it Land of the Dead?
The fans, Land of the Dead. The fans out there know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They already went, don't you know, Tony? Tony, don't you know? Don't you know, Tony? No, Tony doesn't know everything, but the things I do know, I'm damn sure about him.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. And my next question is, you scared audiences with your role of Candyman. Is there anything that scares you, or was there ever a horror movie that terrified you?
Yeah, several. Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh.
Roman Polanski, loved that film. And it particularly resonated knowing that the Dakotas, where John Lennon lost his life. You know, and that's the main character in the film. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Oh, that's
as a
classic.
Kid before cable, we would all in the schoolyard. Everybody would know. We didn't need a TV guy. We didn't need a cable guy. We just go to the playground and listen to the word on the street. Okay, Abbott and Costello coming on at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Go check it out. And boom. And then we talk about it all day. That, the original Frankenstein, the original Bride of Frankenstein,
classics.
The Invisible Man, Dracula. Recently, I definitely liked Midsommar this year.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen
Did
that.
You see it? Good, solid film, man. Good, you know, had some flaws towards the end, but completely no words, no flashing, but scary as heck. A Quiet Place. Kaczynski's Quiet Place, which is now making part two of, you know, I'm a Stephen King fan all my life. You know, there's...
And it just came out too, fan. Part two.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, no.
I was busy watching, you know, Miles Davis' Birth of the Cool.
But bringing back to Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein, that was filmed, like part of it was filmed in Stanford, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I believe part
what
of it.
What was the link?
I forget where exactly it was filmed. I know the ending with the castle. I think it was filmed. I could send you the link. I'm going to look that up after the interview.
Yeah.
I could send it to you. I remember reading that online. I was like, really? That was filmed there?
Wow. I spent a year in Stanford in an interim school between Gene O'Neill and Trinity Rep at a place called Stanford. Conservatory. That theater is no longer there. But yeah, it was a year in Stanford, very corporate at that time.
Mm.
And, but they had the New York Post, which I became instantly addicted to. Reading about New York from afar and the adventures of Studio 54. Never made it there, but I made it other places. the Ritz in New York. You remember the Ritz?
Oh, yeah.
The Ritz was, man, I saw King Creole and the Coconuts there four times. I saw George Clinton. Phenomenal. As a matter of fact, that's something that's on my table, which is a biography of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, and wow.
Filmmakers want me to play George Clinton. So we'll see if that happens. And that would be an honor.
Oh, that would be wild.
Would be. WFUNK.
Oh, man. Now,
so you got to do whatever you do in life, it has to make you laugh with pure enjoyment, not like dread Monday morning. Oh, God, I got to get up to work. Okay, whatever you do, you got to like love it, man. Love it to pieces.
Because they say it's not really
love
work
it like
when
Tupac
you do
it. Love it. No, it's not at all. Yeah. And let me tell you something. Film work is like 15-hour days, but it flies by. A, the pay is phenomenal, and B, you're doing something that you know is going to be appreciated. And maybe not. Sometimes you strike out. I once did a film called a version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Was directed by the late John Buechler. It didn't come out well, but the making of it, it was a challenge, and I loved it. And it's one of my regrets, the things that didn't click.
What year was this film?
And along with that was maybe 1998-ish. Hmm. So it's out there, but I don't recommend it. But only, you know, I tried. I learned then that something is very important. You're only as good as your weakest link in any film, because as soon as something bad comes up, you get distracted from what the main story is going to be. Everybody's got to be on the same page to tell the story that's in front of you, and tell it honestly. And if it's not done honestly, then it gets into inadvertent comedy.
I got to ask you this too, because this is big in today's day and age in film, especially horror films. How do you feel about remakes today?
I wish that there were more original writing out there, and I know that there is. I know Hollywood is afraid of taking chances with young talent or new talent or undiscovered talent, but I think that, you know, America is a very complex place. And so any place you have this kind of complexity, there are stories that haven't been told that need to be told, which is one reason I'm going to dive into the whole reality world, because I want a sense of truth. So I want, and I encourage, I started off as a writer. When I went to Trinity, my focus, my number one focus was writing and then acting. And it wasn't until, but we had great acting teachers, including Suzanne Shepherd, who played Carmela's mother on The Sopranos. And she was the best acting teacher I ever had. Shut me down, broke me apart, tore me down, and built me back up. And I wish everybody had that kind of experience and that kind of mentorship. You know?
Wow. I didn't know that you were a writer either. Wow.
Yeah, that's I've written several scripts. There's one that I think make it done. It's called Sikeo, which means the looting, and it takes place in the Dominican Republic, about baseball, loosely about baseball. You know, like in the last 20 years, there's been at least 10 baseball players that have died from the DR, you know, either in the off season, coming home, getting in a car that's too fast, or succumbing to the pressures of the street or whatever. So kind of homage to that kind of fallen stardom.
Now, what do you love most about going to horror conventions today?
I like reacquainting myself with fans, and the main thing I love is seeing the fan art. That's great. I mean, financially it's good too, but I genuinely enjoy meeting fans and talking to people and trying to figure out why they would even want or be interested in what a skinny black kid from Connecticut has to say.
Oh, no. You're a legend.
You can't ever think that. The minute you think that, you're done.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
You have to have that sense of wonder, man. Like, you know, it's not over. And until it's over, you can't even put a label on anything or anybody.
Mm.
I don't believe in living legends. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
I mean, there's great talent out there. Don't get me wrong. I love, you know, I'm a huge sports guy. You know, my Yankees look great.
Oh, yeah.
I wish we had shored up some more pitching, but I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, and that also brings me to my next question. What other sports teams that you root for now that you just said that you're a huge Yankee fan?
Yeah. Well, growing up in Connecticut, you know, I had my choices. So I wasn't a Celtic fan when I grew up. I was a Knicks fan until I moved out here and met Kobe and Shaq and immediately became a Laker fan. But my three teams are Yankees, and people hate me for this because we're winners, but the Yankees, the Patriots.
Oh, no.
And the Lakers.
Oh, no. I'm a Jets fan.
What do you mean? Oh, no. You're a Jets fan? Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, man, but it's all good. You guys, you beat the Patriots during the regular season from time to time.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll end up with Antonio Brown.
No, it was just announced on the news, actually, during this interview. I got a Bleacher Report notification that you guys picked up Antonio Brown.
We did. I know that rumor was floating around all day, so it's official.
Yeah.
See, more fuel for the hatred. Thank God I was in Vegas 6 months ago, and I already placed a bet for them to win it all. Along with the Yankees and along with the Lakers. So mark my words, this time next year when we re-interview or when I stop in person in the studio, okay?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, if anybody can handle AB, it will be Belichick, because the first moment that he starts any bullshit, he's going to be on his ass.
Oh, yeah, he'll straighten him right up.
Yeah. I know, weird how that happened and all this stuff he had to go through and put up with, and, you know, it's bad behavior. But if anybody can get him straight, it will be the Patriots system.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. They're going to be burning the Jets.
I know,
defense.
Nobody. This is just one more reason for people to hate us. It's cool.
Well, I look at it this way. The Jets, we never get just these great players. I mean, I'm so thankful we have Le'Veon Bell, but Antonio Brown.
You got Le'Veon Bell.
But that just makes it null and void now because our defense is, it's really bad this year. The cornerbacks, we don't have Revis anymore like we used to. And our corners are just shaky.
Yeah, well, that's the joy of a 16, you know, of a 17 game season, man. You know, you never know.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's your big day. You guys play tomorrow, right?
Yeah, we play the Buffalo Bills.
You should get that.
Yeah, we should.
No offense to Buffalo chicken wing fans out there. You should get that.
Oh, my goodness. But as a Laker fan, I understand because you moved out to L.A., but
I got to hang out with Shaq and Kobe. Yeah. Come on. What?
I'm still a Knicks fan, though.
And that was that. Talk about hip-hop. Talk about hip-hop. We're the greatest hip-hop duo in history.
Oh, yeah. Shaq.
Reference on how many songs? Come on.
Yeah, Shaq and Kobe.
Just forget about their solo albums.
Yeah. I think Shaq is the greatest athlete rapper of all time, though. He's got some records.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But that, how much, I mean, not Latrell Sprewell?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, but I'm going to be.
Forgot about that, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to forever be a Knicks fan, though. I'm a dedicated Knicks fan.
Yeah, listen, man. The Knicks broke my heart in 1994 in the playoff season against Houston. Okay. I go on the dream, man. John Starks is that final errant shot. And, yeah. Yeah, I have a soft spot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, and Madison Square Garden is the mecca of basketball, not to mention the cage on 4th and 6th. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just not a big fan of the owner, Dolan. I just feel like the team hasn't been just same since the 90s.
How did they mess up, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving possibly coming there? How did they mess that up?
It's the owner, and I think the whole Charles Oakley situation makes it worse.
Oh, man, when they kicked Oakley out of the garden.
That was ridiculous. Really?
How do you do that? How do you do that? I'm sorry. That's disrespectful.
It is.
But we digress.
Oh, my. Yeah. We could go on forever about that, especially Dolan. And I just, you mentioned before, because my next question is, what is next for you? You mentioned before you got the reality TV coming, autobiography coming. Anything else in films? I know you mentioned before you're going to keep that under wraps, though. Anything else, or?
Yeah, well, I did I got 8 films in a can. Mm-hmm. One that really, really sticks out. Two. One is called Badlands, or more than that, which is a Western period piece. And I shot something in St. Louis. The film of gangster. It stars a young UK rapper named Q. We shot it in St. Louis. Did a film in Texas called Martha, Texas, about the phenomenon of the Martha Lights. You know about those?
Mm-hmm. I've heard, yep.
Yeah, so that's called Martha, which is going to be great. And, you know, those are the ones that really pop out. Get ready to shoot a new one a week from now in Nashville called The Reenactment, where I actually play reality TV host, ironically, but it's more of a comedic thing. So the future is looking bright, my friend, for all of us.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to what you have coming in the future here. And I want to thank you, Tony, for calling into my show.
Just switched over to the update for the Yankees at the Red Sox, okay?
Okay.
Whoa. 4-0. 4-0, top of the 6th.
Yankees are winning?
And that's why. Huh? Yeah.
Oh, I'm a Mets fan, so.
In Boston.
You're
a what fan?
I'm a Mets fan.
Oh, okay. The Mets and the Jets, huh?
Yeah, Mets.
You're that kind of New Yorker. I love it. It's awesome, man. That's why New York sports pages are the best in the world, because it's, what, at least 9 pages every day?
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see what they can say about AB going to the Pats on Monday.
It's over. it's over for us. So, another
clearly,
year.
Clearly, man.
Just when I thought it was over.
We'll
a whole a
we'll
whole
see.
New nightmare.
Take a breath, Mac. Take a breath. It's all good.
Yep. And
the thrill of sports, the thrill of movies, the thrill of TV, the thrill of writing as well. It's all there. Everybody, choose your side.
Yes. And I
Lakers, Pats, Yankees.
Oh, that's a great duo. Oh man,
trio.
That's right. I want to thank you, Tony, for calling into my show for this interview.
Max, it's been a pleasure. I hope you've had fun and enlightenment as I have had.
Oh, man. Yeah, oh, I for sure did. I had a great time. It was an honor. And like I said before.
The fact that you're a Connecticut resident and native makes it even better.
Yeah, I always say that. I always look online and tell people, I never know anyone huge to come out of Connecticut except for you. And there's like very few people that I know if they're huge.
No, you got Kate Hepburn. You got Tony Randall. You got Eric LaSalle, who did ER for years. So, it's, you know, there's few. But more importantly, the theater scene is where it's at in Connecticut.
Mm.
You know, there's so many. Yale rep is just legendary. So is Longworth. So is Theater Works. So is Harvey Stage.
Mm. And yeah, like I said before,
that's where your mind gets challenged.
Is I would love to have you in the studio when you're in the New York area.
I would definitely. My daughter is in New York, so I come in and out from time to time. I got your number. I'll give you a jingle, or even if I come to Connecticut. All right.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Anytime. I'd love to have you in the studio, St. John's especially. And
I would love to be here.
I think people at St. John's, especially the horror fans, would love to have you up there.
All right. Sounds good, man. Mm-hmm. I'll make that happen.
Yes, and I'm gonna stay in touch with you. I got your number now, and just thank you again. And
why don't you do me a favor and reach out to the theater department at St. John's? You know, because I do guest lecturing. at different places. That's another avenue I really want to do more of teaching, because I taught for 3 years after I got my master's before I moved to New York. So
I'll definitely
got a lot of knowledge to drop on folks.
I'll definitely talk to the theater department. And now that you bring that up, Kane Hodder, actually, when I met him, he gave a speech at St. John's too.
Did he? Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to get you a speech down here too. You inspire a lot of people up here, and especially at the radio station.
Oh, could you hold on 1 second?
Oh, yeah.
Just 1 second, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Gotta call you back. Still doing the interview. Come on over. All right, sorry.
Oh, next door to us, because at the radio station. Oh, no, it's fine. It's perfectly all fine.
Yeah.
Next door to us at the radio station is the TV Film Club. So I bet they'd love to have you in there. They actually have a Candyman poster in the office, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we got to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome.
All right, Tony, I'm going to let you go now and enjoy.
I'm going to get out of here, get in my car, and enjoy the sunshine.
Oh, yes, and enjoy the rest of your day, Tony, and I'll be in touch, all right?
All right, thanks, Max. And when this comes out, will you drop it on Twitter as well?
Oh, yeah, I promote it all over. Actually, you have an Instagram, I think, right?
Yes, yeah. Either one.
Okay.
Or both.
Yeah, you can actually give them your Instagram. Tell them where they can follow you on Instagram. What's your Instagram and
Absolutely.
Handles?
My Instagram is Tony Todd Official, mm-hmm. and my Twitter is at Tony Todd 54.
Great. All right, Tony, I'm going to be in touch.
All right, thank you. My phone number is, I'm kidding. All right,
8 years old. Oh, man. All right, Tony, it was a pleasure.
God bless, man.
Yeah, God bless you,
Take
too.
Take care, all right?
Take care.
Enjoy this change of the seasons, okay?
Yes.
Enjoy those leaves.
Yes. Looking forward to it. All right,
Peace.
Tony. Peace.
Thanks.